Okay, morning everybody, and we continue with the subject that we've had now for a couple of weeks running, is when a goy does melacha for a year. So we first spoke about, are you allowed to ask him, what are you allowed to ask him, when you're allowed to ask him, etc. Now we're talking about if he did it. Obviously there's no problem of asking, either he did it on his own accord or it was asked in a way that's mutter to be asked, if for him ba'alma. The issue here was not the asking. The issue was the melacha is done, may you have hanah from the manah. So we said that there's two different ways to look at it. If there's hanah saguf, there's direct hanah to you, and you could not have had that hanah without the intervention of the goy, then you cannot benefit from what he did, even if he did it on his own accord. So the exception would be if he did it purely for himself, then you can rejoice and you can appreciate and benefit from what he's done. But the moment he does it for a year, and it's something that you appreciate in a way that you can now do something which you couldn't do before, then it is asur. But if it's something indirect and you could have done it, so then the fact that it's now got easier doesn't make it asur. That was basically how we set it up. What would be if something is done for Yidden and Goyim? In other words, a Goy is in charge of, say, turning on the lights in a hotel, and the guests are a mix between Jews and Goyim. Now we say, did he turn them on for the Jewish guests? Did he turn them on for the Goyish guests? Did he turn them for both? Was it make an afkamina? How do we look at it? So the halacha is as follows. If the majority of the people that are affected by the malacha that the Goy has done, the majority is Jews, and we say that he did it for the sake of the majority, and as if he did it for a Jew, and therefore you may not have an offer. So if he turned on the light in the dining room, and before that it was too dark to eat, and now because the light's on, you can eat in the dining room, the Yidden will have to avoid going into the dining room under such circumstances. If you have case number two, if you have a majority of Goyim, so then we say he does it out of the Roiv, and therefore it's if he did it for Goyim, and once he did the Malach for Goyim, we'll have to have an offer. Whether it's a Goyim plural or Goyim singular, if it's clear that he did it for Goyim, that would make it mutter. Therefore, even if you have a room that is full of full of Yidden, and a Goy comes and turns on the lights, but you see that he's doing it for himself. Why? Because he goes and he takes out his newspaper and immediately sits down to read. So you know that he turned it on for himself. Hey, maybe if you asked him, he said, yeah, and you know, the other people enjoy it. But that's not his intention. His intention was doing it for himself. If he wasn't going to read the newspaper, he wasn't going to turn it on. In the Mela, that is considered as if it was done for Goyim, and if you can have an offer from it. What happens if it's 50-50, or a situation where we don't know exactly what his intention was, and therefore we treat it as a 50-50 topic to us? So in the case of a topic like this, we go to Chumra, and we say that it's as if it was done for Yidden, and therefore you may not benefit from such a malacha that the Goy has done. Now there's a fourth case, and that would be that if the work would be done irrelevant of who was in the room, because he was paid to do such a thing. It was his job to turn on the lights in the dining room at 6 o'clock every evening. Irrelevant of who the guests are in the hotel, or whether there are guests in the hotel, if the hotel is empty or something like that. But his job is to go there, turn on the light, and go on to his next task. And he doesn't look who's in the room, or he doesn't care who's in the room. So then we say he's doing it purely for his job and not for the participants in the room, and therefore it would be mutter for a yid to be nene when a guy does something, so to speak, automatically taking into account the participants. The way to measure that, whether it was done automatically, is if the people wouldn't be there, would he still do it? Or if the Yidden wouldn't be there, would he still do it? So again, number one, we said, if the majority is Jewish, then it's done for Yidden. If the majority is, number two is, if the majority is Goyim, then it's done for Goyim. Or if it's clearly done for Goyim by the fact that he took out a newspaper to read immediately. He did some balacha immediately. Number three is half-half, a safek. So there we went to Chumra. And number four, we said, is if the malacha would have been done, even in the absence of the Jews, then we know that he didn't have the Jews in mind when he did. So those are the four categories that we need to discuss when we think about the malacha of what would be if a goy did something for a public. public meaning for more than one person. Now that we and the people that we're dealing with, there is a mix of Yidden and Goyim. So how do we deal with it? So how are we going to look at it in each case? So now we'll bring a couple of examples on how to apply this. So if you have, for example, a building, something that's common around here is you have light in the staircase, and the light in the staircase goes off after a while. You need to press a button to make it go on again. And you're living in a building with a mixed population of tenants, where there are Yidden and Goyim, or even if it's not one of those that the light goes off and needs to go on again, of course, let's say it's one of those where the light gets turned on as it gets dark and stays on all night and goes off again in the morning. So now a Goy comes, one of the tenants, employee or whatever, doesn't make a difference. A Goy comes and he turns on the light in the staircase, so that tonight the staircase should have light on. So we say, who did he do it for? So we say, if this is a building where most of the tenants are Jews, then he did it al das the Yehudim, because he did it al das the Roy. He did it with the intention to satisfy the needs of the majority. And if it was Roy Nachrim, so then it would be Mutter. Now, if it was a case of a majority of Jews and he turned on the light, now comes the next question, what should the Jews do? That's it, they're stuck indoors, or they have to go down the stairs with their eyes closed, you know, with their hands on the walls and work their way around. The answer is no. They're allowed to go through, they're allowed to take the stairs and do not have to close their eyes. But obviously this is not a place for the kids to go out into the stairwell and play a game of cards. The person needs to leave and needs to go out, needs to come back. We say he can do that. But he has to limit the amount of time that he stays there and not intentionally use the light. Now, if this person turns on the light as a job, a tafkid, a task that has been given to him on a, even if it's a one-off basis, it doesn't make a difference, but it's a job that was given to him, and he would do this job irrelevant of who is in the building. For example, it's a Shabbos where all the Jews have left. They've gone Aliyah LeRegel, they've gone wherever it is for Shabbos, and now there's no Jews in the building, and he'll still turn on the light, even though 90% of the tenants in this building are Jewish, but he's turning on the light irrelevant of who's there and who's not there. So we'll say that then it's done for his job and not done for the tenants, and therefore that would be a mutter type of melacha that a person, that a yid can have hanah from on Shabbos. Now, if you have a building, for example, like we have over here, where you press the button, the light goes on, and a few minutes later the light goes off, and the guy walks into the building, and he turns on the light. If he starts climbing the stairs, then even if there's a building that's kulay, all Jews, and there's Jews walking up and down the stairs, we say, look, what's he doing? He's walking up the stairs. He's doing it for himself. Yes, he knows that the others are going to appreciate it, but that's not relevant. What's relevant is over here is that the incentive for him to turn on the light was himself, and therefore it's done as a malacha for himself, and therefore you may use such the result of such a halacha, such a malacha. So again, if a guy did a malacha that benefited you, but you know clearly because you have an indication that he did it for himself, then you may have hanah from that. So some more, or one thing before that, is if you need to go up a dark staircase and you're afraid of tripping or whatever it is, and you ask a guy to come with you, and you don't tell him anything else, you just say, come with me. So you haven't asked him to do anything, but you know very well that when he gets to the staircase and the light on, so here we say that's awesome. He can't come up the stairs without turning the light because it's dark for him, so he's turning on for himself. No, he wouldn't be going up those stairs if not for the fact that you asked. And therefore, that's enough of a reason to say that he did it for you. So true, he's doing it for himself to climb the stairs, but he wouldn't have climbed the stairs without your request. Therefore, that would be awesome. So only if he's going up anyway can you enjoy the light that he's turned on. But to request it to come with you, and then he turns around, that's not. Some more examples of cases of malachas that are done for a collective amount of people would be if you have central heating for a whole building. I think that was common in Yerushalayim, that you had one boiler in the basement and heats up the heat for the whole building, and it was not like in Europe where you turned it on in October and turned it off in March, but here it gets turned on at 4 in the afternoon and at 4:15 gets turned off again. So if you have that type of system where you have a central heat and there's a guy who's in charge of turning on the heat, so then it depends who are the tenants, who are not the tenants, and as we said, if he is told to do this job, irrelevant of who's home and who's not home, it could be that this week all the Jews are out and only the goyim in the building, and he still turns on the heat. So you see that he's turning on the heat. It's left after for the sake of the Jews. He's turning it on for the sake of his job. If that's the case, you may allow him to do such a thing and enjoy the heat. However, you have to remember the separate issues is that even if he's turned on the radiators, turned on the central heating, we may not fiddle with the valve or the tap that is attached to the radiator on the wall and change the flow of water in and out, because that causes problem official. There's water inside that goes around the system that's boiling, it's cooked, and back up again. So when you change the valve, you're changing the flow of hot and cold water and causing the cold water to cook. If you have an elevator that has a operator, and there's a guy inside the elevator pressing the buttons, operating from outside, it used to be in the olden days, irrelevant. Do we have to know how it is done? Is it done for the people who get in? So then you have to see who the rove or the people in the elevator are. And if it's something that he just presses the buttons, you know, this is an elevator that goes from floor 1 to floor 0, from 0 to 1, 1 to 0, and all back and forth all day, and he just presses that button every 10 minutes, which would be some sort of automated personnel carrier that's not automated because you needed someone to press the button, but it was, he's going to do it irrelevant of who's in with the Goyim or Yidden, so there would be a tzad to be made on such a thing. The reason why I say tzad, I'll get to in a moment, but from this point of view of being nene, we having benefit from what a Goy did, that would be permitted because he's not doing it for you, he's doing it because of his job, that every 15 minutes he's going to hit the button, then it's irrelevant of who's inside. So now to get back to what I said before about there's a tzad to be nekel. In other words, if you have an automated system, whether automated because it has a time switch, or you have a guy who's pressing that button every 15 minutes, irrelevant. I mean, it's the same type of thing if you think about it. You have these shuttles that will take you from one terminal to another in an airport. They're totally automated. They arrive at the terminal, the doors open, people get in, it gives you, you know, 60 seconds, and a sound comes on, watch the doors, mind the gap, the doors close, the shuttle moves to the next terminal, doors open, 60 seconds later it beeps, and this goes back and forth all day. There's absolutely no one pushing any buttons for any getting to get on such a thing. Can you get on such a thing on Shabbos? Obviously, Shabbos is, the airport is not a place to spend on Shabbos, but that type of concept, that you have a malacha done on an automated format, what will be the din of getting into? So that really gets to the shaila of Shabbos elevators. In other words, we got into this because we're talking about an elevator that had a goyisha operator, and we said that if the operator is doing it for the goyim, or is doing it as his job and not caring about the yidden, so essentially there will be a heter to go in such an elevator. And now, so really it should be no different from an automated elevator. So even though this is not our subject, I'll just spend a minute on it and say that obviously the bottom line of this is that before you use a Shabbos elevator, an automated elevator, go ask your rabbi, because there are many other shaylos involved. Number one is it could be that it's a marisayin, and therefore the Shmir Shabbos brings down that someone who is considered looked up by the tzibur, he is a position of a rov or something like that, shouldn't do it, because people might misunderstand what happened. Therefore, you should avoid doing it. And apart from the eye, it's very clear that there's a Shabbos left and there's a sign and all the rest, and then you want to remind the sign. Now, there's a separate problem, is getting into an elevator on Shabbos doesn't have a proper hechsher, because the elevator has many, many features that could be activated by a person's entering into the elevator. Some elevators, most elevators today, have an electronic eye to see that no one is in the doorway, so the door doesn't close on them. So how do you get in if you break that circuit of the electronic eye? So the good elevators have, that circuit gets disabled, and then you hear a sound which is warning you that it's going to be re-enabled. And then after that, the circuitry is enabled, it checks that no one's standing in the door, and the door closes next door. That's why it beeps to warn you that the circuitry is going to go back on again. But there are other elevators that weigh the people that are in elevator. Then there's a whole discussion about, is there a difference between going up and going down? Is there different hydraulic elevators and pulley elevators? Maisa, there are books written on the subject. It is complicated. So this is not the makom for it. I'm just bringing up the various shailos. Now, if you saw Machon le Halacha ve Technologia in Beit Hagan has a whole book called the Shabbos Veda, and they go through the details point by point to deal with the technology of elevators and how to get around them and to make them kosher Shabbos. Therefore, although we said that if a goy presses the button and he's doing it for the sake of goyim and you happen to be there, you can go with him, you have other problems to take into account. Therefore, I don't want to say straight out, oh, it's mutter. Just using this as an example of a goy doing a malacha for multiple people, and we want to know whether that is something that we can be made from or not. Okay, here's an interesting one, and that is if a goy is in charge of an automated door or gate or boom or something like that, and you're coming past and he opens it, you may go in. You're at a hotel or a parking lot or a hospital or whatever it is. There's an electronic door, and they press the button, the door opens, and you can go in. Obviously, we're not talking about where you activate the door, or you somehow cause circuitry to activate the door. That's not the issue. The issue is that goy, he sees you coming, he recognizes that the door needs to be opened because a human being needs to come in, and he presses the button and he now opens up whatever needs to be opened. Can you go in? And the answer is yes. And why is the answer yes, even though he did it for you? Because essentially he could have done that manually. If there would be a power cut, he could then override the system and do this manually. So the fact that he does it electronically, he has to sit in his booth and press a button, is much easier than if he would have to go out and take a handle and wind it and override the whole system. But we're not worried about what's easy and what's hard. We're worried about what's possible and what's not possible. Like we've said multiple times, if I ask a guy to bring a chair up to the second floor and he takes it by elevator, but he could have taken it by stairs, there's nothing wrong with asking me to take something up to the second floor, even though I know he's going to take the elevator, because he just as well could have taken the stairs. So if this is a type of door, boom, access, gate, or whatever the case may be, that is can be done manually, and he chooses to do it electronically, that's not my issue, and therefore the fact that he opens the door for me, he opens the door away from me electronically is his issue, not mine, and therefore I may go in such a situation. There comes another interesting subject, and that is going on a boat or ship on Shabbos. So we're talking about a cruise journey, whatever you want to call it, that extends more than a day. We're not talking about that you get on Shabbos, get off on Shabbos, that obviously we're not going to allow. But we're talking about someone who's going on a journey that is something that's in our day and age not so common, but it's not so far in the distant past that people did that, traveled across the Atlantic, and it took you 10 to 12, 20, 14 days. And that meant that you would be on the boat for Shabbos. So can you get on such a boat? Not only would you be on the boat for Shabbos. So essentially, if the boat is driven, sailed, whatever you want to call it, activated, run by goyim, so that's number one. There's only a Amir al-Akum that we start with. Obviously, you cannot go on a cruise ship that hires Yidden to do the Rahman al-Islam, to do the work that keeps it going. I imagine that if you get on a ship, you don't have to go down to the engine room and ask who are the religion of all the men there. Although, why not? Because we have a rule called the parish, Drupal parish. When you're dealing with a individual that comes out of a crowd, you can go with a chazaka that he comes from the majority of the population, and the majority of the population are goyim, therefore chances are he's a goy. We do have a swara of hechter shalavarim barinam. That means that if it's possible to ask and find out without too much effort, then you have a mechuyev to. But I imagine that since the chance of the people working in the engine room are goyim, especially Danish shipping company like that, where there's very few yidden that live in Denmark or stuff, and even less that they in the shipping industry and become engine room drivers, some of you don't even have to ask over there. But let us say you know the fact that the ship is run, the captain and the staff, of course, these are the staff that have to do with the running. If there's a restaurant on the ship and the chef is a year, that doesn't make the journey on the ship any problem. It's a question of how, whether to keep the rest of the time. Now, second of all, if the ship leaves on a fixed timetable, and if it doesn't leave when there's a majority of Jews, it doesn't leave when the reservations are full and then he's going to the Jews, but it's a ferry that's all, that ferries a sort of shorter journey, but it's a fixed journey that goes, you know, transit, just like we have today. We have flights every 4 days. There's a flight from this city to that city. So with the ships also, you had regular scheduled ship sails. So then we say that even if most of the passengers on the ship are Jewish, then there's no problem of taking such a ship, as long as obviously not getting on Shabbos. You got on before Shabbos, and now the ship is traveling for multiple days, which includes the Shabbos, you may get on such a ride. You don't say that what they're going or doing, that they're doing for the sake of the Yidden. They're doing for the sake of themselves to get across the ocean, because this is what they're paid to do. On, you know, once a month, on the 14th of the month, they always leave. So then that's what you, that's, then that makes it, as we said, that when he does it, irrelevant of who's on, then that makes it mutter to use his benefit from his malacha. And that only applies to the actual running of the ship, because the ship runs with the same, pretty much the same effort and malachas, whether it's full or empty, whether it's going or yet. So if this is a scheduled trip, so they're going to go irrelevant of who's on board. But this doesn't apply to the food. The food is prepared for each individual passenger separately, and each, you have more passengers, you make more food, less passengers, less food. So therefore, food is different. Food is something where, as we spoke about last week, that there's such a thing as Shema Yarbe. When a guy does a malacha in something where there's a possibility that if he knows that he eats once, he will add more to it, so then we can't have hanah from his work. We gave the example of a guy who's at the feeding trough and does a malacha to put food into the feeding trough for his animal. He sees a yid coming, so then we say that he's going to add in more for the yid, because what he did is only enough for his animal and not enough for the second. So only if he doesn't know who you are and he doesn't care, that if there's leftovers, you can let your animal enjoy it. But if he knows who you are, we're afraid he's going to add in for you. But when it's a type of malacha that it's, he turns on the light, even though there's 1,000 people in the room, he wants to read the newspaper, light is good for one, is good for 1,000. Makes nearly echa, nearly meyer, as Chazal tell us. Therefore, it's not like he's going to add more light because there's more people in the room. So that someone else came in, is going to change any way of how the light gets used. Now, there's a separate issue, and that is that since a person would be on a boat where he will be in a situation where the goyim are going to be doing malachas for him, so he has to take this into account in advance. How can you get on a boat knowing that you're going to be on the boat on Shabbos? Therefore, Chazal made a distinction between different types of travel. If a person is traveling the Shem Mitzvah, he needs to go to yeshiva, he needs to go get married, he needs to go do something, whatever it is. So then, we say that he can get on the boat already on a Friday, even though he knows everybody sees that he's getting on Friday and it's a 7-day journey, it's just going to be Shabbos. But someone who's going for a non-mitzvah purpose, we call it a tiyul ba'alma, it's a cruise, so then he may not embark on a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, but has to go on a Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. So if you're booking a cruise that's going to be traveling over Shabbos, make sure you take one that doesn't leave on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but rather on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The reason for that is that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, we say, belongs to the previous Shabbos. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday belongs to the next Shabbos. So if a person's going to put himself into a situation where there might be a question of Chilul Shabbos, so we say that already within 3 days of Shabbos, he should take that into account. Another way where we take this halacha and we discuss it would be if a person has surgery. So if a person has surgery and there needs to be post-surgery care, which would require certain things to be done on Shabbos, so if possible, you try to get a goy to do them, whatever the case may be. But if a person has surgery and it will require something to be done post-surgery, so then you're going to make a difference between mitzvah and non-mitzvah. If it's elective surgery, that is, for example, cosmetic surgery, and it's not for the sake of shidduchim, so therefore there's no mitzvah involved in it, and it's a separate shayla lehalacha where the person may undergo cosmetic surgery because surgery is something that's dangerous, and to put yourself into a matzav of danger, you have to have a good enough reason. But don't take this as a straight blanket issur on elective surgery. Every case would need a shaila, because sometimes some things are important, and therefore we're not going to just say, well, don't do it. Just know that there's a reason to ask the Rav a shaila when dealing with elective surgery that has no health benefits and is purely done aesthetic reasons, whatever it is. But and even if a woman is, I pick on a woman because that's the common, is already married and her husband asks for something, whatever it is, you know, I'm not trying to be generalized, but just know that there's a shaila and there's also hetere. Don't take it as a blanket hetter, don't take it as a blanket isur, but there's an issue. But nevertheless, legabe Shabbos, the person who's choosing to have elective surgery, l'chayre, should not do it on a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, because there's post-op care that will need to be done on Shabbos. Therefore, if it's elective, then you should not do it on those 3 days prior to Shabbos, rather than the beginning of the week, even if the care is going to be for 10 days, and therefore, for sure, Shabbos is going to pass. But nevertheless, there's a difference between putting yourself into a situation on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, than putting yourself into the situation on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, on how it appears that these are the days that are close to Shabbos, and therefore these are the days that one should not start a process that will lead us to have to get involved with Melachos and Shabbos. So even though in both cases it will lead us that way, but we don't do it on the 3 days prior to Shabbos. If it's done for a mitzvah, of course health would be a mitzvah, it doesn't have to look after itself, and he needs surgery for whatever the case. We're not talking about Chas v'Shalom, Sakonis Nefashos, someone comes to, has a heart attack, and the doctor says do a bypass, that you do immediately, you do it on Shabbos. We're talking about something that needs to be done for whatever, I don't know what the example would be, but whatever the case may be. So if it's for a mitzvah, in other words, for a person's health, it's something that needs to be done, so then you can do it on the 3 days prior to Shabbos. So back to what we were saying is that a person is going on a journey. So we said that if the boat is run by goyim and it is run for the passenger just because it's scheduled or because there's roiv nachrim, and therefore they're not doing dafka for the yidim, so then you can get on such a boat, and even though traveling Shabbos, you can stay on the boat and not to jump overboard. But we're going to say that it depends on the purpose of the journey, whether you can leave on 3 days prior to Shabbos. It has to be a mitzvah in order to leave. What about if a person's going for business? So here, they brought down, if I remember correctly, it's Rabbein Tam, but it's brought down that business in this context is a mitzvah, and therefore, even if a person's going for business, he may leave 3 days prior to Shabbos. If a person's going for business and the only option that he has is a Shabbos trip, there is no boats, there are no boats leaving this harbor during the week, only activate on Shabbos, but then you can make a shaila, it's not totally asur. There would be ways of getting around it by getting on the boat before Shabbos, and it's complicated. Hopefully, no one's going to have these shailas. It doesn't seem very practical in our day and age, where we don't go on boats, fly, and usually they're outside of Shabbos schedules and times. But you should know that if a person needs to, for whatever reason, travel, and it's going to be going on a Shabbos, if you get on an Erev Shabbos, there are ways to do it, and therefore one should make a Shabbos Chacham. If a person arrives, he should try to stay on board. If he arrives on Shabbos, doesn't matter when he left. If he arrives on Shabbos, he should try to stay on board until Moed Shabbos. If he may not stay on board, then you may get off, but you may not take anything with you, including your passport. You may not carry, you may not move it outside of your tchum, and therefore you need to get a goy to carry it for you. And if you know that you're leaving on a Wednesday, but you know that it's arriving on Shabbos, then preferably take the one that leaves on Tuesday and arrives on Friday, or one that goes on Thursday and arrives on Sunday, and not the one on Wednesday that arrives on Shabbos, so you avoid all vacated halachot. Okay, that was an aside. I have a few minutes to finish the chapter. Not that we have a new topic, the next chapter is also Melechis HaGoy, but slightly easier. If a goy does a malacha on Shabbos for a year, but it's that type of malacha that it, you don't get direct hana out of it from the etzim malacha, from the actual malacha that he did, then you can have hana from it. An example would be a goy opened a can of fruit for you, so the fact that he cut the metal to open it is not what you mean. You're having hana from the fact that you can get at the food. So it's not like he turned on the light and I appreciate the light. Here he opened the can and I appreciate the food. So therefore it's not considered as direct hana, therefore would be mutter if he did such a thing, if he opened up a letter and I want to read what's inside it. So he didn't, that's not direct hana from what he had done, what the goy did for me. A goy polished my shoes and they wear them, because that doesn't change the way I can wear. I could wear my shoes when they're not polished, I could wear my shoes when they are polished. So if you went and you polished my shoes, again, don't put your shoes out in the hotel room in a way that it's going to take them to your questions. You should tell him not to if you see him coming to do it. But it happens. Your shoes were left lying around and he took them and he polished them. It doesn't make them awesome to wear because you could have worn them otherwise. So too, if there was a little bit of light in there and the guy came and turned on the big light, again, you could have used this room. Therefore, the fact that he added more light, even though he did it for you, will remain mutter to have. Now, all this so far is malachas that are daraisa. What about malachas rabbanon? So, a good example of a malachas rabbanon is something that comes from the courts of Kum. Kum on Shabbos is a rabbanon. Some postim hold that if it comes more than 12 meal, then it would be a daraisa, but generally we deal with, from this point of view at least, we deal with this halacha tchum. We don't ask the distance. Tchum is an isur derabanan. Therefore, if a goy brought something for you from outside the tchum into the tchum, or he brought it from a place where there's no eruv, but it's not a rishus rabban daraisa. So a goy who lived across the road, crossed the street where there's no eruv and brought you something to your house, can you have hana from what the goy did? He did it for you. For you, considered it as a Shabbos. You couldn't have food without him doing it. What will be the din with the malacha that was done on Sunday? It was a derabbanan. And the answer is that here we're going to make a difference between who was it done for and who it was not done for. Well, whoever it was done for, we're going to say that it's asur to have benefit from what he has done. And on Moshe Shabbos, he has to wait what's called b'chdei shiyah, so the time it takes for him to do it. If it takes him 2 minutes across the road, so Moshe Shabbos, you wait 2 minutes. But if it took him an hour to bring it from outside the school, then you got the Moshe Shabbos, you've got to wait an hour. What does it mean, l'mishu chumah b'shviloi? It means that who was the target of the goodness that the guy did? Who did he bring it for? He brought it for all the household members of this house, even though he tells you it's for you, but it means you, your wife, your children, and anybody else who is who is reliant on you and is part of your household. Someone outside has no problem, can even eat on Shabbos. So a goy brings you a bar of chocolate from a half an hour journey away. You may not eat that chocolate, but your neighbor can eat the chocolate. Therefore, since your neighbor can eat the chocolate does not become mukhtar. So if he gives it to you, you may take it, move it, move it away, hide it from your kids, whatever the case may be. That is because it's not considered as mukta. And the same thing would apply if a guy went shopping and he bought something and then brought it to your house, even though there was no problem of school and no problem of Erev, but it was an Erev, whatever the case may be. But he did a Kenyan of Mekah Chomemka, he bought it, which is a Rabbanon. So it would be that for those who it was intended for, it would be Osir. And Osir and Moshe Shabbos until the time it takes to buy it. And for anybody else, it would be mutter. Okay, good to go. Finished chapter, and Hashem, some more on Malachas Nachrim, but again, slightly.
Okay, have a good week.
You too, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great week.